That's the end of the first half. As the teams head to the locker room, the Spartans lead the Bulldogs by a score.
You guys stink.
Jeez, Coach, we're only down a couple of points.
No, I mean you guys really smell. You need to hit the showers. And here, I got every one of you new bars of soap from the Sterling Soap Company. Each bar is artisan crafted using natural ingredients and essential oils. They also have shave soaps, colognes, beard balm, and a whole lot more. Now get in there.
But Coach, we have another half to play.
I don't care. I can't stand to be around you.
A few minutes later.
All right, bring it in tight. You guys are still playing terrible, but you're smelling great out there. Now listen, you're going to need to stock up for the rest of the season. We got a lot of tough games left. So go to sterlingsoap.com after the game. That's S-T-I-R-L-I-N-G soap.com. You got that?
Yes, Coach.
Great. sterlingsoap.com on three. One, two, three.
sterlingsoap.com.
We'd like to welcome everybody back to the Football's Family Podcast. And typically on this show, we talk a lot of football, but the family part is that we can talk about anybody's story that wants to come on. And I've got a special guest that has a different kind of view on sports with the book that he wrote. And would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, my name's Tom McEwen, and my book is This is Panther Country. It's about my high school basketball team and them winning a championship.
Well, he is holding it up. We are audio mainly, but the book, can you hold it up so I can describe it?
Okay, sure.
There you go. It is absolutely a beautiful looking book. And I assume that these are players that have played on the team.
Correct. Yes. So these players were about 4 years, 3 to 4 years ahead of me in school. I write the book from my point of view as a junior high fan player looking up to these guys as they went on this incredible run to upset their way to winning the first ever Long Island basketball championship up in New York.
Well, that's pretty neat. That give us a little bit of background of the book before I start asking questions here.
Okay, so New York basketball, so it was the 50th anniversary of this particular title. So it occurred in the 1974-1975 season. Back then, New York never had an open state championship like states like Indiana had, where every school played and they had one state championship. They really only had county championships for up until that point. And then in 1974-75, they still didn't implement a full state championship, but they let each county champion play one more game against another county champion. And Long Island only had two counties. So we played, it was Suffolk County was where my high school was, Babylon High School. And we played the champs of Nassau County, which is closer to New York City. And we played them for the first ever Long Island champion. And they were considered a more powerful bastion of basketball, being that they were right on New York City's doorstep. So, but the game was played in the Nassau Coliseum when the Nets were playing there with Dr. J was on the team at the time. So it was a really big deal back then, and really a exciting time to be a kid in school.
Did you get to go to the stadium and watch it?
Absolutely. Yes. So, the championships were, so first they had the two county championships were on a Friday night. Nassau had their county championship. Suffolk had their county championship. And then on Sunday, the two county champions played each other. So it was a championship weekend. So, yeah, I got to go to the Nassau Coliseum twice to see games that weekend. And what was kind of cool is they were both doubleheaders with a Nets game. So we got free tickets to go and watch the pro team with Dr. J as well.
Was this – now, I'm not familiar with – New York State, New Jersey, other than I know a little bit from the Revolutionary War, and I know about the New Jersey Devil. I mean, it's real, so I know all that stuff. But can you kind of tell me about, number one, counties back then? Counties in your area, counties here in Tennessee are very spaced out, very rural in a lot of ways. Is that the same way it is where you're from?
No, it basically Long Island has, I think, 20 plus counties, but they had 11 what they call New York State athletic districts. So there were 11 of them, and they were considered county champions. Nassau and Suffolk were their own. So I'm not sure how it worked in other areas in the state, but there were 11 of them, and each one had like 60 to 70 schools in it. So it was
a lot
pretty
of schools.
Big, It was, yeah. So there were about 120, 130 just on Long Island. And that was just the public schools. There were also, a lot of private schools on Long Island, a lot of Catholic schools. But this was the public high school championship. Yeah, it was a lot of schools, and they were all degrees and sizes. My high school, Babylon, was one of the smaller ones. We had a graduating class in Babylon was about, 125, 100 people, and we'd play against, bigger schools, Brentwood and Massapequa and other ones who were, they'd be 800, 1,000, in their graduating classes. So we
Good
were
gracious.
bottom 20% as far as size. So when this first championship came along, they expected, a couple of the giants to be competing for it out at the Coliseum. And then we went on this Cinderella run, which caught everybody by surprise.
So they in Tennessee they have a class A, class double A, class triple. Do they have that
So
there?
back then they did not. So they had just one champion out of Suffolk County. So it was like the 56, 60 schools there were back then. There would only be one champion. And up to that point, there were eight leagues. They each had about seven or eight teams in them. Actually, it was seven leagues with eight teams each in them. And they pretty much went by size. So we were in League Five. We should have been in League, seven, but the geography played a little bit to do with it too. But we'd often a couple of times we'd won our league, and then we'd lose the first game in the playoffs because we'd get matched up against one of these giant schools. But this particular year we had a really good team led by a kind of a once in a generation player, this guy named Glenn Vickers, who went on to play for Jim Valvano at Iona before Valvano went to North Carolina State and won his national championship there. And we had a really visionary coach, this guy named Roy Coble, who could sit down and talk X's and O's with any coach in college and basketball. And he did a lot as they a lot of them came to recruit Glenn later on. So it was a good time, a good matchup, and we had like the perfect team at that perfect time. The first time Nassau was going to play Suffolk, the game was going to get real visibility that even the past county champions hadn't gotten. But this was the right team at the right time, and they went on this great run.
That's not a out of the ordinary thing in the sense of a smaller team, because you see that in the NCAA. You see what Villanova won a couple of years ago. Am I correct on that?
Correct. They won twice in 5 years, I think. Yeah.
And it's not necessarily what you would consider a powerhouse, but the difference between what I understand, for me not being such a basketball guy as you probably are, is in college you can recruit, in high school you got what
Exactly.
you got.
You get what you got. Right. Exactly.
So what made that team, and I assume that you knew these players
Correct.
and that you interviewed several of them.
Correct. So the way I wrote the book is I'd been romancing and telling this story for years, and then I decided I got a little time. I sold my company, had a little time off. I said, I'm going to try and put this into a book. And I was surprised at how quickly I could write. I was writing like 1,000 words a day. I wrote the book in like 6 or 7 months. And I wrote it first from my own memories and using the newspaper clippings and stuff. And then after I had the first draft done, I went back and talked to the coach and the players. And also, just members of the community, my family and everybody, because it was my memoir, so it talks a lot about my family, my relationship with my father, dragging him, getting him to drive me to get the games and everything. And so I went back and talked to a lot of people and kind of tightened up the facts, and put a little of the coach in particular, who's still alive at 91 years old down in St. Augustine, Florida. Yeah, I went down to visit him for a couple of days, and he had scrapbooks and everything. And so we were kind of looking through, reminiscing, and he really loved the book. And what he most liked about it was is he was heads down, making sure the team was ready to play and getting them ready. And he had no idea of like the ripple effect of how it was affecting everybody else in the community, because I was telling it from my point of view, where I was going home, talking about it at my dinner table, hanging out with my friends, trying to get into the practices so we could see the varsity play. And also kind of from the social aspect, it was high school. There were a lot of parties going on, on Friday nights and stuff like that. So he was really fascinated by what was going on or outside and around, what he was doing, just doing his job.
That I love how a community could be brought together through high school sports. Give you kind of a background. About 4 years ago, we had a flash flood in Waverly, killed about 22 people, wiped out schools and everything like that. It was terrible. High school football brought our community back together. Your high school's basketball team then, what do you say, 74, 75? That seemed to have brought a community together, and it seems like it still had an effect on you, 50 years later.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's still apparently your coach. Did he pass, or is he
No,
still?
he's still around. He looks great. He's still got the same sense of humor he had back then. If you get a chance to read the book, he is and was a funny guy. I mean, it was amazing how he could go almost from
Well,
nightclub comic to, disciplinarian who could,
it see it seems like it seems like the people there from your community really got together. You talking about it, getting your dad, where the game sold out. I mean, the more that they played, were there just tons of people there?
Typically, so the teams would play like during the regular season. Generally, they'd play their games on Tuesday and Friday. So the Tuesday games were played in the afternoon, and those were generally, the whoever the home team was, their team was there. But those were tough ones to get to because people were, just getting out of school. And in my instance, I was on the junior high basketball team, so we were practicing while they were going off to play. But the Friday night games were the big ones. So the second game of the week, the Friday nights, was played in at nighttime in the different gyms. And the typical gyms back there might seat 800 to maybe 1,000 people, but generally they were built up more than that. There'd be 1,200, 1,300 people in there, people standing on the sides. And of course, as we started winning more that season, people who weren't necessarily into the sports scene, started going to the game, so they got really crowded, and it was always such an event, a Friday night basketball game, particularly during that run.
Do they still have a banner up at the high school?
They do. They started to get crowded though, because it's 50 years. They've won some championships since then. But I went back and saw they actually combined a lot of them, because they have so little wall space now. They've got listing of the championships by decade, but they had at the time one banner for each championship, and they
That's
had the.
a good problem to have there. You have to combine
Exactly.
stuff. Tell me, do you have a picture of that in your book?
I have a picture of the team. I have a picture of the coach and the captains accepting the trophy at the Nassau Coliseum. But I don't think I have a picture of the high school. I couldn't get a really good one. But on my website, I think I might have a few of
Yeah,
those. Yeah.
what is your website?
It's my name, TOMMCKEOWN books.com.
Okay, we'll make sure we have that in the notes.
Okay.
Why you were telling me you sold your business, you had some time, and 1,000 words a month, correct?
1,000 words a day.
1,000 words a day. Okay. And it took you 6 months to write the book.
Yeah.
Okay. You got into this, you lived it, but you got back into it. What do you gather today, 50 years later, from that experience?
Well, one, I it was a magical time. I'd always had kind of like two things about that I wanted to write a book about. One was my father died very young. He died in 1980. And kind of the 70s is when I was in high school. So I've always kind of romanticized that period a little bit, because it was my time with my father, and I was athletic, and we spent a lot of time together. And then there was also this great story, which this Cinderella run to a first time they ever had this championship. So this represented a good way for me to talk about, my father, and how much I adored him, and also tell this great story that I thought would captivate readers. So between the two of them, I was able to, push out a really good story that talked about my life, and also my view of this great team that went on. So it was a book of, it was a passion project. It all came from the heart. Just, the love of basketball, the love of family, love of my community. And I was surprised at how easy it was writing it.
All right, so this again goes back to I followed basketball in the early 80s. I can remember Magic and Kareem, and the Lakers were my team because that's what was on TV. I'm trying to remember back into the 70s. 3-point line, is that available at that time?
No, it's actually the 3-point line didn't make the 3-point line and the 30-second the 24 was actually a 30-second clock didn't make it into high school bat most high school basketballs till 1987. So back then there was no 3-point line and the teams could hold on to the ball forever without shooting it. That was back when Dean Smith was running his four corner offense and he'd hold on to the ball for 5 minutes before even shooting it or just spread it out when he got a 4-point lead with 8 minutes to go in the game.
That's one way to do it. I'm glad they have the clock. Jerseys. This is one of my favorite stuff about anything in before the 90s Bulls. White Converse, white canvas.
And actually, the assistant coach on the team, a guy named Don Borch, he was an art teacher, so he actually got everybody on the school to buy these Converse sneakers that had kind of a they weren't the canvas, they were kind of more of a rubber, and they had like a felt strip on them. So everybody bought those sneakers, and he would use orange magic markers, which were our team colors, and he'd get it, he'd do it, he'd artistically. Paint all the felt strips on the sneakers orange, so it looked like it was, part of the uniform. But yeah, Converse was the sneaker everybody had back then.
So they call that the what the Chucks?
Well, the
Is
Chuck
that?
Taylors were the ones you were referring to, the canvas ones.
Yes.
Those were the signature ones that you saw all the time. But they were trying different models back then, and I can't remember what the name of that sneaker was that we had, but it was a big thing to like buy that sneaker and then paint the gold, the orange stripe on it.
And the shorty shorts. If you ever look, yes. Oh gosh, I remember. John Stockton was one of my favorite players, and he never went to the long shorts as other people did. That's 70s basketball to me, 70s and 80s basketball.
Because it was really the Fab Five from Michigan who really got the long shorts and
They
made the
did,
style.
didn't they?
Yeah,
That was.
they set a whole style revolution, the Fab Five. Yeah, they were.
I just hate that Chris Webber is the only one that people remember about that timeout. That was Jalen Rose and Chris Webber, they were great, great players.
The fifth guy on that team went to the local high school. I live in outside of Dallas in Plano now, and Jimmy King was the fifth guy on that team. Yeah, he went to Plano High School or Plano West right here.
That team was, that's when you realize that recruiting is not fair if
Yeah,
you get that.
exactly.
So let me ask you a couple more questions here, and I do appreciate your time.
This is fun.
It is very fun. I'm not, I don't talk much basketball, so I'm trying to go back in my memory about basketball. Where I grew up, 1997, the lady basketball team from the high school I attended won state. And it is still, you go into my county, the county I grew up in, and they have signs everywhere. 1997 state championship. Do they still kind of hold that team in reverence? I wouldn't say reverence. That's disrespectful to God, but you know what I mean.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And it's particularly because it was the first one ever to win that particular championship. They actually won the first two because they came back the next year as the defending champs and had and just were, an even better team. But that year, nobody expected them to be the ones to win it. They went on this roll. And so there's always, and this was the 50th year anniversary of that championship, which is why everything kind of came together. I sold my company. I was able to write the book now, and I was pushing to get it released. And I did get it released on in March, which was the 50th, almost to the day, the 50th year anniversary of that title. And Pete, there was talk about having a reunion anyway. So I launched the book up at my high school, actually across the street in the American Legion Hall. And we had a bunch of the ex-players, the former players come, both coaches, the coach who's down in Florida came up, he flew up for it. And the assistant coach still lives there in Babylon. So, and everybody, it was a full event, must've been like 200, 250 people there. And it was mostly people who were around when that happened. And as soon as word kind of leaked out that I was writing the book, people came out of the woodworks on Facebook and all the social media. Hey, here you're writing a book. Are you covering this? You're covering this? And I was like, I'm just writing about the 74-75 season, but you'll like what's in it. I talk about this and that. And I talk about the town and the village as well, some of the local shops that were around. It was Not too dissimilar than it is today, but there were some real institutions. There was we had the last kind of a corner store that had a soda jerk, and the people who owned it lived down the street from me. And you go in there and order an egg cream and read one of the magazines at the counter. And there was a pizza place and a Carvel and everything. And and the whole village, the district, was probably 4 miles catty corner from one end to the other. So you could pretty much walk it everywhere, but most people rode our bicycles everywhere. Everybody had a bicycle in the 70s, and we were riding them all over town to get from to somebody's house or up to the school. It was an interesting racial time as well, because back in 74, 75, it was only 10 years after the Civil Rights Act was passed. And we had an interesting configuration out on Long Island. So Babylon was almost kind of a model district, because we had pretty good integrated school. It was probably 80% white, maybe 15% black. On one cor though on one border on our town, we had a high school that was entirely white. And then on another border of our of Babylon, there were two that were almost one that was entirely black, and two that were pretty close, like 70 to 80%. So it was Babylon kind of figured it out first, I think, the kind of the race and everything there. I really enjoyed growing up there, and the my close friend in the book is actually the brother of the star player on the team. We were over at each other's house all the time and everything. So it was I say we were colorblind, but I was white at the time, so I don't know what others were speaking,
Oh,
but
that time, and it's, I say in a lot of cases it's better now, but not really.
yeah.
Up north, it might have been different. Down south, it would have been a completely different story. But it's just good to see that a community can come together and celebrate the accomplishments of some kids, regardless of what they look
Oh,
like.
yeah. Yeah, no, I know, and nobody that was never an issue with anybody. And the kind of the fun thing is, if you saw the movie Hoosiers, it kind of was a little bit like that, in the fact that there were certain stalwarts that went to every game, but then as the train got rolling and we started going deeper into the playoffs, five cars became 10 cars, became 15, 20 cars, going to the game and everything. And it was always a big scramble to get a ride to the game. And I jokingly say I got very popular because I managed to get my father to go to every game. So I had like three or four empty seats. So every Thursday and Friday, people were like, "Hey, Tom, you got any room to go to the game?" And so I could hold it out to a couple of girls that I might have been
Oh
suiting.
yeah. Oh yeah, you got to take advantage of that, Tom. I mean, it's not something that, I mean, if you didn't, I would look down on
Exactly.
you. So tell me a couple things here, and I do appreciate your time, but like I said, Zoom kind of, number one, I'll tell you about you. I love it. Again, football is my major focus on this, obviously, but the family part, you obviously are into this because you grew up in it, but also because you love the sport and you love the situation. I appreciate that about you and your enthusiasm. That's awesome. And I'm sure the book will reflect that. Where can we get the book?
The book's available at Amazon, Barnes and Noble. You can get anywhere you can order books, because it's been fulfilled through a distribution channel. So if you go to a local bookstore, they can order it. You can order it at that website. I talk TomMcKeownBooks.com. There's a shop page which has lots of buttons you can click to get it from your favorite source and stuff like that.
Perfect. Perfect. So let me kind of let's get a little deep philosophical here, okay? Taking what you learned from this book and your experiences, and you're telling me that your school was small. What do you think really made this team win this championship that you're writing about? What was one of the things that did that?
Well, they were a selfless group, first of all, and they were very tight. They were almost like family. They didn't care who got the credit. They didn't care, who got the shot, as long as the team won. And I even just talking to them today, like the star Glenn Vickers, if he scored 2 points in a game, he didn't care unless if the team won. And I think that was a big part of it, was the selflessness of it. They were also It was a very deep team, which was unusual for us being small. We had a that team went like eight players deep, so it was like, eight really good players in a typical good year in Babylon. Because of our size, we might have three or I joke around, we would have like three or four, really good players, and then they'd have to find people like me to fill out the rest of the team. Yeah, that wasn't as much the case that year. They had like a good deep team, and it really had this exceptional coach. He coached a little in college after that, but he developed this offense that he had us using from the time we were in seventh grade all the way up to the varsity. And it was an offense that could work very well. It could work well if you had untalented athletes, but it was phenomenal when you had a really talented team and a team of good size. So I think with this team, he finally got the perfect offense, the perfect players to put into this offense. And he was a master with X and O's. So I think, again, that came to the visionary, the hardworking team, the closeness of the team, and the selflessness of it. I think all came together for that, phenomenal run there.
See, that's what I like about sports like that. You might have a star, like you said, Mr. Vickers, that didn't care if he got 2 points as long as the team won. You don't hear that much, do you? You don't hear about that much, do you?
Yeah, that, I remember that being a compliment that Julius Erving played to Magic Johnson. He said he could dominate a game scoring 3 points, because he could pass the ball and he made everybody else better. And I think that was, Glenn, of course, was a great scorer. I think he averaged over 20 some points a game, but
In
he
high
made
school?
everybody. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That,
He
that's
was,
pretty good.
yeah, he was a 6'3", 6'4", and he was the guard. So, but he was like magic. He could jump center if somebody fouled out. He could play the post.
Yeah. What was that TV show? Did you watch that? It was, I think it was on Max. It was Showtime. Yeah,
What was the?
they were talking about Magic being was 6'8",
Yeah,
point guard.
he changed the whole definition of what a guard was.
So
Yeah.
6'3", 6'4", guard. Good gracious.
Yeah. In high school, yeah. Yeah, I
Well,
I was 5'7", and I played that position 4 or 5 years after him when our program came back down to earth.
but hey, at least you got to play that. How are your knees holding up?
My knees are holding up fine. Yeah.
Now, about to say, playing basketball as long as I did, they hurt even now.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming on. Like I said, you have the enthusiasm and and you love what you do, and I do appreciate that so much.
No problem. I hope you get a chance to read the book. I think
Well,
enjoy it. It's a lot of family in it, and
I'll give it a go. I'll give it an order. And like I said, I'll put this on our show notes so people can see what you wrote and maybe get a chance to order it themselves.
okay, fantastic.
Thank you so much, Mr. Tom.
Oh, you got it. It was a pleasure meeting you, and this was a great session. I enjoyed it.
And thank you all for listening to Football's Family Podcast.
Hey there, sports history fan. This is Arnie Chapman, aka the Football History Dude, and I hope that you enjoyed this recent episode presented by the Sports History Network and were able to learn some good old-fashioned sports history knowledge nuggets. I started the Sports History Network back in 2020 with the mission to help podcasters find a community of like-minded sports history nerds, as well as helping aspiring podcasters to start their own shows. We have a little bit over 30 shows on the network right now covering all sorts of sports history. But as far as I'm concerned, we're just at the toothpick in the ocean moment, you know that. Can't even figure it out because there's so much more coming. We wanted to create the ultimate headquarters for sports yesteryear, starting with Podcast Network and our website, but we're going to continue to move into other mediums as well. And here's the cool part, because we want you to be part of our team. So if you're interested in starting your own podcast, or maybe being a guest on one of our shows, or who knows, maybe even writing an article for us over on the website. Seriously, all you gotta do is reach out to us on the contact page over at sportshistorynetwork.com. You can be as technologically savvy as a Neanderthal tapping on a stone trying to figure out this whole hieroglyphics thing back in the day. Again, it doesn't matter, because even if you don't understand the whole podcast space, we have a production team that can pretty much help you out with doing everything. All you gotta do, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com, head to the contact page, fill it out. That message goes right to me, and I'll reach out to you as soon as I can. But for now, dude, I'm through if you're through.